The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, confederation championships, world championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Greetings, everyone. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and this is the TWBC Podcast. So glad to have the pleasure of your company. And also, speaking of having someone with the pleasure of their company, is a friend of mine who I've actually been wanting to do a podcast with for quite a while now, considering the brand that he represents and the concepts that that fall underneath that wing. It is none other than Adam Cord. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. I'm doing pretty good. Although, actually, I keep saying not too bad, and I've got to try and get out of that greeting, because it's like a typical English greeting under the premise is that, you know, things are bad, but they could be a heck of a lot worse. You know, I should say awesome or great, fantastic, wonderful, that yeah, type of deal.
You live in America now. Be optimistic. Come on.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll delve a little bit into the general American-style optimism. But you're probably wondering, you're listening in, who is Adam Cord? I mean, why have I decided to interview him? But Adam, introduce yourself to the good people.
Sure. I born and raised in Indiana, which has a pretty strong slalom skiing background. A lot of lakes there and a lot of really good skiers that come from Indiana. And I didn't really get into skiing that much. I was a kid. I skied a little bit there and I competed a little bit, but it wasn't until I got to college and went to Purdue University, which is also in Indiana.
Yeah.
That's when I really got hooked on it, which is, I think, what happens to a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
College skiers. So I went there and I started skiing on the team there, and I got linked up with some really good skiers, like Cale Burdick went there as well. So we were roommates together and got really hooked into water skiing there. So that's kind of how I got tied into it.
And the likes of Jeff Surdey as well, I guess.
Jeff Surdey, yeah, exactly. The man behind the U.S. Open and Nationals. So
yes, indeed. So out of Indiana, most people, well, a good portion of them, go to Purdue for engineering degrees, isn't that right?
Yeah, and that's why I went there as well. So, I went to college, didn't even know they had a water ski team, and I think it was right before I went, someone said, hey, you should go out and you know how to water ski, you know how to run the course, you should go out and join the water ski team. And I said, I'm not good enough. You know, I can run like 15 off. And they said, oh, you'll probably be the best one on the team. And I was. So it was great. And I found out that it was co-ed. So that, you know, that kind of sealed the deal on that one. Yeah.
Sign me up on the bottom.
But yeah, I went there for engineering. I started in mechanical engineering, ended up switching over to industrial engineering, which is basically manufacturing engineering. And that's still what I do now.
Excellent. So your history in the sport has been, well, I mean, it's been basically a product of National Collegiate Water Skiing, you know, and you're trying to, you know, dovetail that into what you're doing with engineering. So when did all the epiphany start with, like, saying, okay, I'm seeing the skis and seeing what I'm riding right now. We can do better than this, surely.
Well, so that started immediately after college, because my first job out of college was working for O'Brien Water Sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I got hired actually to work in marketing, believe it or not, for O'Brien.
Okay.
And I think it's just because that's the position they had open.
Okay.
But they wanted someone who had an engineering background who also had a water skiing background. So I got hired to work for O'Brien. So I immediately moved out to the Seattle area, where they were in Redmond at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe 2 weeks after I got the job, they flew me down to Orlando to go ski with Drew Ross and Glenn Campbell.
Oh, okay.
And a bunch of other, you know, the people who were on the pro team at the time, and I was like, okay, this is cool. This is really cool. So that's what got me into it, and I ended up working there for maybe 5 years, and I want to say maybe the second or third year was when we brought Andy back in. Because Andy, you know, he'd been on O'Brien for his whole career, and, uh-huh. and then he left after he retired to start help Herb O'Brien with Radar.
Yes.
And then he, I don't remember exactly why, but he ended up splitting up with Radar, and we rehired him. So he started working with us. So that's when things started to really turn my engineering gears on, because I was working with Andy Mapple, who at the time, you know, I think while he was competing, he would kept a lot of his ideas close to the vest. You know, he just didn't want to...
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He didn't want people to know what he was working on. But once he retired and he started really get into the engineering ski design side of it more, he was a lot more open about his ideas, what he tried, what worked, what hadn't worked. And so he and I kind of became really good friends because we could kind of communicate on the same level as far as what happens when you do this with ski or that. Let's change the flex. Let's try a different bevel. Let's try mm-hmm. this or that. And so I learned a ton from him. So anyway, we did the elite program together. And then when he decided he wanted to start his own ski company, I actually left O'Brien and moved down to Orlando. And I lived in Orlando for a year to help him get his ski brand off the ground. So that's kind of what got me really going on it.
Now, before you actually came into the AM program, the Mapple Skis program, you'd actually made some really, really big inroads at O'Brien so far as ski design was concerned, because one of the skis that always seemed to be rather unusual is the ski without any taper or any rocker at the front, and the ski that Nicole Arthur used to ski on.
Yes, yes.
That thing. Tell us a little bit behind the whole concept with that, because it's interesting to draw a comparison between that and what you're currently doing right now.
Yeah, so that was the first iteration of that ideology, and I have to admit, looking back on it, it was really just a test, and we didn't know exactly what we were doing. But at the time, we thought it made a lot of sense, and people who are in the snow skiing world will also draw parallels that at the time, that's when the kind of the really more shaped snow skis started coming out. There were wider everywhere, but wider in the tip and tail. And so we said, well, let's kind of take a little bit of a page from the snow ski industry and see if we can put that into a water ski. And so that's when we started running the wider, flatter tip on that ski was called the Quattro.
Yeah.
The idea being you'd have a lot more tip support. And most skis, you know, they taper off in the tip and they have a lot of rocker in the tip, which makes it so you can't use that part of the ski. If you put too much of that ski in the water, the ski's going to grab and want to rotate really hard. Or if there's no tunnel in there, you basically have no tip support. So you watch, not to call it any brand, but you watch some of the skis with more tip rocker that are really narrow on the tip. People can't put the front half of those skis in the water. If they do, they go out the front.
Hmm.
And so that was kind of the first thought behind that was way back then, and that was when it was Drew Ross, Glenn Campbell, Andy Mapple, and me all just basically sitting in a room drinking beer talking about ideas, and that was where that came from.
That must have been some pretty darn good beer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, none of us could keep up with Glenn Campbell, but we tried.
Yeah, yeah, he does have a pint or two on occasion in a typical British pub. I don't know whether you've been over in that part of the world, but they're
No, but I have spent a few too many times in a pub with Glenn in America, and never went well for me.
Okay, all right then. Moving along past all of that. You've had history with O'Brien. You've had history with Radar and AM skis, and now you know you fast forward. Uh, you're you're the man behind Denali Skis. Now, tell us a little bit about the history about that incarnation, how that occurred, and what concepts you wanted to bring into that that hold true today.
Yeah, so that started. I met Adam Caldwell, and I was living in Seattle, and he also was living in Seattle, and he was doing some of the INT tournaments at the time out here, and he was probably like a. I think he could maybe run 35 off on a good day, which was about what I could do at the same time.
Okay.
And if you're an INT, that means you're pro. I think if you can run 35 off or something like that, I think you're considered a pro in INT. And because I was working with O'Brien, we sponsored INT, so I was sort of required to go to all the tournaments. But it was fun. I mean, I like going to them. So I went to a lot of the INT tournaments, and that's where I met him. And he and I were always competing in the pro division together. So it was kind of a rivalry at the start. And then we just kind of became buddies because he's also an engineer and has the same kind of mind as I do as far as let's look at everything from a physics perspective. And so he and I started talking about ski technique. It wasn't at all about ski design at the time. It was purely about ski technique. And back then there were a lot of, this would have been like 2008, 2009, that time frame. Back then there were a lot of different ideas floating around, like West Coast slalom was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were a lot of people writing articles and making videos and stuff like that about how to ski. And so he and I were out trying all this stuff, and some of it worked, some of it didn't work, some of it was really good, some of it was really bad. And he and I both were out trying to do all these new techniques and finding that a lot of it just didn't work for us. And so we sort of got together one day. I remember there was one day we went out skiing on Lake Sammamish. I think we went free skiing on Lake Sammamish, and we started just trying some really out of the box ideas with how you should water ski. And we just came to the conclusion that we weren't going to read any more articles. We weren't going to talk to any more coaches. We were just going to try to figure out how to do it ourselves, purely from a science and physics and geometry perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how he and I got started. And we started coming up, just bouncing ideas off of each other. Like, what if you do this? What if you try that? You know, let's think about it from a different perspective. Let's think about it from a overview of, okay, let's look down at a boat from the sky and watch how the skier would ski around the pylon and try to figure out what's the best way for that skier to move left and right.
Wow.
And so that all started back then. So we started skiing together and bouncing ideas off of each other. And he ended up moving to Trophy Lakes in Charleston.
Oh, okay.
And that probably would have been 2009 or 2010, right after that. And so he and I were still talking, and he was skiing a lot more then because he's living at Trophy Lakes. He lived in an Airstream camper out there.
Mm.
And so right after that was when I moved to Orlando and started working with Andy with his ski company. And what happened is Adam would come down. He worked at Cummins in Charleston. He would drive down every weekend and just hang out with us every weekend. So he'd get off work at like 5 p.m. on a Friday, and he'd get in his truck, and he'd drive 6 hours to Orlando and get there Friday night. And he'd hang out with us all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and then get in his car Sunday night and drive back home. He'd go back to work on Monday morning. He did it every weekend for a year. And it was just because he thought what we were doing was super cool, and he just wanted to be a part of it. He would literally come and just sweep the floor in our shop just so he could be there, you know. So we started using him as a test dummy for all of our ski ideas because he makes a spectacular test dummy. And because he's not afraid to try anything, and as you guys have maybe seen into some of the skiing, he's not afraid of anything. So we started doing that with him, and he really got into it and thought it was really cool. And he said, oh, I'm going to start making some of my own skis. I said, okay. So he actually built a mold out of concrete and a press out of wood. And he was building skis outside next to his camper at Trophy Lakes.
What?
Yes. So he was building his own skis back then out of basically just like scrap materials he had found lying around, and that's kind of how it first started. So
that blows my mind because I have visions and I've been to a couple of ski factories and they've got like the CAD machines, they've got the computerized lathes and all that cutting molds out, you know, and then putting them in the press for a few minutes at certain degrees and then just file the edges down and hey presto, you got a ski.
Mm-hmm.
Adam,
this was the opposite of that. 100%. He took a ski that he had like shaped to what he wanted with Bondo and filing on it and sanding and things like that. And he basically cast a concrete mold off of it. And that was his mold. And he started building skis out of this thing. And so what ended up happening is I got married, needed a real job that actually paid, and so I left Orlando and went to work, and he was still down there building skis, and he was just iterating, building skis, calling me, asking me questions, because I, having worked in O'Brien and then worked with Andy, I knew all the in and outs of ski manufacturing, so I was basically teaching him how to do it through this process, and he's out there in the outdoors building these skis. And so he did that for probably 2 years after I left. So we're talking now in, it's like 2013, somewhere in there, 2014 maybe. He calls me and he says, I want to start a water ski company. He said, these skis are really good. I want to sell these. And I said, that's a terrible idea. Don't do that.
What?
And he goes, no, I want to do it. I said, listen, man, I've been through this. There's no money in it. It's a lot of work. It's going to make your hobby no fun anymore. And he goes, I don't care. I want to do this. And so for about 6 months, we went back and forth with him trying to talk me into starting the ski company and me trying to talk him out of it. And then one day he calls me and he says, good news. I just formed an LLC for a company called Denali Skis and you're 50% owner.
That's just remarkable.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, great.
Oh, by the way.
Super. Super. That sounds like fun. So I said, all right, well, then we got to do this right. And so I when I was at O'Brien, I learned how to do CAD so I could actually design the skis. So I did all the ski design at O'Brien and then for Andy. And I also learned the CNC programming so I could run the CNC machines.
Okay, and the CNC is like the electronic lathe and that type.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the machine you actually use to cut the molds and cut the cores and things like that. So we basically said, all right, well, if you're going to do this, we have to do it the right way. We need a CNC machine.
Yeah.
And so...
And they're not cheap.
And they're not cheap. Exactly. So he goes, all right, well, what do they cost? And I was like, ooh, you know, they started like $20,000 for the cheapest ones, and it goes up from there. And he's like, I don't have any money. Said, okay. So he starts looking online, and he finds a kit for like $3,000 and maybe even less. I think it was like $1,200 or something. It's a kit that you can buy and build your own little CNC machine.
Wow.
So he builds one, he buys this kit and he modifies it because it was maybe like 2 feet by 2 feet. It was like
so not exactly
footage.
Made for a 60, yes. 65 inch long
so,
ski.
So he buys it and then modifies it so it's 2 feet wide, but it's 6 feet long. So it's just long enough.
Yeah,
that you could cut a mold or cut a core or something like that. So he builds this little CNC machine and he puts it in his garage and he's like, all right, now what? So that's how it started. And so I did all the programming for it and we got it running and we started actually cutting real molds and cutting real cores and building skis. And he built a press that was actually like a real press and, mm-hmm. Had one and started laying up skis.
Because that's an expensive undertaking as well, just getting the aluminum press, you know, because, I mean, you have to have a block of aluminum, you got to shape the underside, shape the top, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and then press it for a certain amount of time at a certain temperature, you know.
Right, right.
And you know, just the slightest imperfection on one of those things,
and you
have a batch of skis that don't work right and you can't sell them.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that we had come up with, and I had actually come up with this when I was working with Andy, was a way to cut wood molds really quickly and cheaply so that we could test stuff. So
uh-huh.
instead of using a big block of aluminum every time you want to cut a mold, you could use wood. And you can actually make a decent ski. Maybe not a good enough ski that you would sell to somebody, but good enough that you could test an idea and go try it. So we started cutting these wood molds every time we had an idea. So let's try this, let's try this, let's try something else. And pretty soon what we had found is that as we iterated, we would have an idea. I would go put it in CAD. I would do the programming and send it to him, and he would cut a mold and build a ski out of it. And we could do that in 3 days, probably.
Wow.
The whole process. If you had an idea to actually a ski you could ski on, we could do it in 3 days. And so, I mean, at the time, every 3 days, we were basically coming out with a new ski shape and trying it. And what we found is that as we did this, we were iterating. The look of our skis, if they started out looking like every other ski, a year into this process, our skis look nothing like anything else. And it was just because we had iterated so much that we had iterated into this ski that looked totally different. But it worked. You know, it was doing what we wanted. That was the whole idea. We just wanted to keep going and make it better. And what happened is we ended up, like today, you look at our skis and they don't look like anybody else's skis.
Absolutely.
So, but it was purely just, let's not look at what everyone else is doing. Let's just do what we think makes sense and just keep trying stuff. And I'm not saying it wasn't like a linear improvement where every single one was better than the last one. A lot of them were really terrible. Some get better, some get worse, but you're always trying things, and slowly the ball moves forward, and it gets better.
So the latest Denali is the C85. Is that reflective of that, the iteration, the number, and that?
Yeah, so that's version 8.5 is what that is.
Okay.
So basically, what it is, the very first one was 1.0, obviously, and we would iterate something. If we make a small change, it would be 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, 1.6. And then if we made it a big change, we would jump to the next number. So we'd go 2.1.
It's a bit like software. 2.4.
Yeah, that was the idea. You know, that's the only way we could keep track of it. So, this one is actually 8.5. And we added it up one time, I think we're somewhere in the 60s as far as how many molds we've cut.
Wow.
Like 65 or something like that is how many molds we've cut so far. And so how many different shapes we've tried.
All right, then. So we're at the stage now. You're at Denali Skis. You're producing skis. I mean, you don't produce an awful lot of skis, do you? Not compared to the likes of every other ski company out there. I mean, you take an order online and you basically produce pretty much based upon those orders, aren't you?
Pretty much, yeah. We try to stay ahead of it as much as we can, but Adam still builds all the skis himself. We do have another person who works for him now named Meg Dealey, but she's fairly new. And still, he lays up every single ski himself. So every time a ski goes into a mold, he's the one doing all the layup process and putting it in the mold. And so as you can imagine, that limits our ability to build skis. But I gotta be honest, I kind of prefer it that way because we talk to every customer and we work with every customer on fin settings. And half the time we end up if they send video, we end up coaching them because we say, yeah, the ski's fine. You got to work on you.
Yeah,
but you can only do so much of that, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
If we sold 1,000 skis, we wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
So, it's on one hand you go, yeah, I'd like to grow and grow the business, and the other hand you go, it's going to change if we have to do that, unfortunately. So, but right now it's great. You know, we have a manageable number of skis that we sell. We get to work with all the people who buy them, and it's been a lot of fun this year, especially with this ski because of the C85, just because it's been super easy to just put people on it and have them go out and rip, and it doesn't take a whole lot of tweaking, if any.
So. And, I mean, explain the sizing a little bit because, I mean, the length of the ski doesn't change so much.
But
the width does.
Yeah, and that's an idea that even Andy and I used to kick that idea around back 10-plus years ago. We always talked about doing that because there was a ski that he developed called the Synchro. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
ski.
I remember that.
But that was it wasn't exactly like that, but it was a really short, wide ski. They made a 63-inch one that was really wide, and people ripped on that thing. People were running 39 on that thing. And so he always kind of thought that made more sense to have a shorter, wider ski. But so it's also an idea that Adam and I had talked about for a long time. And a couple of years ago, we started really looking at whether that makes sense or not, and started trying to do as much research as we could about, not to get too much in the weeds here, but about planing halls and the science behind a planing hall, which is what a water ski is, a planing hall.
Yeah.
And there is actually a lot of really good data out there that was done around World War II about planing halls and how they work and where, how the lift is generated. And what you find is, in general, take a planing hull. So think of a boat.
Yeah.
And if you want to carry more weight in a boat,
do you make it longer? Do you make it wider?
Exactly. Exactly. And the answer is, you make it wider.
Yeah.
Making it longer does nothing to increase the carrying capacity of a boat.
Yeah, because I mean, and I mean, just as you explain it, I mean, I'm coming up and like thinking, okay, this is a genuine concept here, because I mean the size between a battleship and a frigate isn't its length,
right?
It's its width.
It's its width. Yeah,
you know,
totally. And I mean, the science is plain as day when you go look at it, because when you're on plane, the lifting area of the body, the boat or the ski or whatever you're looking at, is very short in the lengthwise, but it spreads all the way across the width of it. So you just make it wider and you've increased the carrying capacity. Making it longer does literally nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, just because we can and we've got the ability to cut molds fast and cheap, we said, all right, let's just try it. So we just started cutting these molds of varying widths and trying it and finding people who are 200, 210, 220, 230 pounds and putting them on these short skis. So take it, try it, see what happens.
I mean, do they get a little bit scared before they head out into the water?
Oh, 100%.
Because I mean yeah. like I weigh close to 230. Okay, yeah. It doesn't look it, but yes, I do weigh 230. If I look down and I've got a 65 inch slalom ski on my foot,
right? Something's
wrong here.
Right.
What's going on?
Right. Yeah. But what we found is we put these big guys on these skis. And they go to the buoy, and the thing just turns on a dime. And they've never felt that before, because they're used to riding 69, 70-inch skis that turn like a Cadillac. So they get on this, and it's as fast as anything they've ridden, but it rotates way faster. So we just kind of said, let's just try this and go for it and see what happens. And we're now in our third year of doing this, and it's been great.
And that goes alongside the logo, the slogan that you have: "No hype, just science."
That's it.
Who came up with that?
I don't remember. It's probably Caldwell. He has all the creative ideas. But the other side benefit of it that we didn't really think of at the time is that boot position and fin settings are the same for all of our sizes.
Wow.
Whereas most ski companies, you gotta figure out each one. They're exactly the same for every size. We don't even have to think about it. So it's really nice. Someone sends video and says, hey, what do you think? I should move the hand fin here. I don't even have to ask what size it is. It doesn't matter. They're all the same as far as boot position and fin settings. So it just makes everything a lot easier.
All right, then. The future Denali going forward, what do you see in 5 years' time?
Well, if as long as we can keep Caldwell healthy.
which is a challenge.
Which is a big if.
Taking recent events into consideration.
It's a big if. Yeah. So, we have refused funding on multiple occasions for this company, because we've had quite a few people come and say, hey, I'd like to invest in you guys and help you grow and that sort of thing. And we have every time turned it down, because we want to grow organically, first of all. And we want to maintain control of the company.
Of course.
So we've had a few opportunities to really, okay, let's say someone hands us a blank check, and we can go out and hire more people, expand the size of the shop, blow out the marketing and do a lot more marketing and try to grow that way. And we've decided not to go that route, because we would rather grow slowly and grow organically. And we're learning as we go. Like that was the whole point. In 2009, when we first started having this conversation, was we just thought this was a really fun sport and really interesting to learn about technique, ski design, all of it. I mean, it's like peeling an onion. The more you get into it, the more interesting it is. There's just so many layers to it. And so for us, we just want to keep learning. I mean, you can ask anyone, we're sitting at Hilltop Lake here. You can ask anyone out here, this is the lake that I ski at. I'm trying something every time I ski. Every time I ski, I'm trying something new. I'm trying either a different fin setting.
Yeah,
I saw
that when you came in. You was having discussions.
Every time. And it's not, I love it. It's just, it's so much fun to do that. And that's what I get in. That's what I like about it. If I went out and just skied on the same setup every single time, I'd probably quit in a month. Like, I'd just get bored. But I have a blast out here just trying new fin shapes, new ski shapes, trying some crazy new technique idea, whatever. So to answer your question, like, for us, it's we want to keep learning. And if the company grows as we do it, and then great. You know, that's great. We're going to just keep doing what we're doing and just keep trying to make better skis. And hopefully we can keep getting better at it.
All right, then. You have been listening to Adam Corden. Absolutely thrilling conversation. I mean, I was only earmarking about 20 minutes for this podcast. We've gone way past half an hour with the content there. Any parting words for our good folks out there?
No, not really. Just I'll say this: if you're out skiing and you're thinking about trying new things, do it. It's totally rewarding, and there's a reason why your fin is adjustable.
Excellent stuff. that's a great one-liner. You've been listening to Adam Cord. I'm Tony Lightfoot. This is the TWBC podcast. And until the next time, I will say ciao. I'll say ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.